bag and it goes to the space station. But Cygnus needs to get another ride. They've done this type of thing before. Their main plan is to launch on their own rockets. I say they, I mean Northrop Grumman is the one that manufacture Cygnus and also the Antares rocket, which it normally goes up on. But Antares is being redeveloped. They're getting new engines from another company called Firefly that's developing engines for them. But it's not ready. But Cygnus was designed to go up on anything. So it's done many, many fights on Antares. And at one point, when Antares did have an accident, I think that was back in 2014, there were two flights that went up on an Atlas V rocket that Boeing and Lockheed had sent up, ULA. But this time they got a contract with SpaceX to do the same thing. They have plans on doing two more Cygnus launches, cargo launches to the space station. And then after that, they figured their Antares rocket should be back in operation. Any last comments? And if not, I'm turning this back to Roy.
One quick comment?
Hey, Jim, go ahead.
It's interesting. I remember launching rockets in the late 70s that had the Antares name on them. Definitely a track record for this that goes way back to our childhood. So back to you.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, I've done the rockets too. I don't remember the name that was on it. Remember the solid engines, solid fuel engines they had. That's a lot of fun. No question about it. Nowadays, it's almost impossible to find a place to launch one of those things, though, Jim.
You just got to be creative. But definitely more difficult.
Yeah, I was creative a couple of years back too with my grandson. During the middle of COVID, everybody's inside. Everybody's afraid to go out. Well, we're out in a ballpark, but not a soul anywhere. Put it on second base and off it went.
Sounds quite American to me.
So, very good. All right, this has been Paul for the SpaceNet report, WS2N, and we'll turn it back to Roy. AC2GS, back to you, Roy.
This is AC2GS. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for all that you do on the technical net and all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it, and I especially appreciate all your help. And I appreciate everyone who participated tonight. I hope you had a fun time. I hope you learned a few things. I hope you'll come back next Sunday when we try and do this all over again. So our rebels now are done. I remind you of a great line that Dick, K2RIW, almost always ended his technical net advice: be kind to each other. Please try to be kind to each other. We live in difficult times. There are amazing times, they're fascinating times, but they're dangerous times too. So be good to each other. And always remind you of the Roman philosopher Epictetus: it is impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So try and keep your mind open. Have a great week. Stay safe, stay warm, stay snow-free, be well. And we'll talk to you next Sunday. This is AC2GS, closing with the usual line, Slava Ukraine.
AC2PL, thank you, Roy.
Thanks also from KD2VAC. Nice job, Roy, again.
This is Kilo Echo 2, Alpha Juliet Uniform. I'm Charlie. Thank you, Roy.
Roy and Paul, great job as usual. WB2BX in Northeast Philadelphia.
Sounds 73, guys, and Frank, 73. Did I not leave enough time for you to get in, I hope?
I didn't really try to get in this evening, busy with a couple of other things here, but thanks for checking.
Very good, Frank. Yeah, I know. A couple times I left the space, but I didn't hear anything. Now, Roy knows if somebody's on EchoLink. I don't know. I can't tell from you. Anyway, have a good night, Frank. WS2N2.
Yeah, so three, Paul. Yeah, I did find the comment interesting. I think somebody mentioned that their dad joined the Signal Corps and became a radio technician in World War II and got through the war without being shot at. My dad did essentially the same thing. He was on coastal tankers as a radio telegraph operator before the war started, but at the outbreak of war, and decided it would be a lot safer to be in the Signal Corps. I thought he was probably the only one who ever joined the Army to avoid getting shot at, but apparently it was not a unique thing in those days. 73 guys, WB2BXO.
WB2AZ, thanks. BXO, you're still there, WB2AZ.
Yeah, very good, WB2ZAZ, I think it is. Familiar call. I wasn't sure if you were going to stick around or not. Yeah, was that you or your dad who, like my dad, was a radar tech in the Second War?
Yeah, I had been a radio just turned down, but you said caught my attention. I'm glad you liked what I said, and I'm sure it was very common. Although my father-in-law has a totally different, but even better story.
Go ahead.
Can I tell you? Please.
You may, I'm all ears, as they say.
This one has nothing to do with electronics. My father-in-law always had poor eyesight. You know, it wasn't enough to cause the problems in normal life, but when he got drafted, they declared his eyesight would not stop them from drafting him, but he would not go overseas. And then he's in boot camp, and some officer calls him in and says, "Private, let me get this straight. You own a bar and grill in the Bronx?" He says, "Yes, sir." "And you're exempt from overseas?" "Yes, sir." "Congratulations, you're running the O Club."
"It's a job for everybody."
My father-in-law spent the duration running the officers' club at Fort James, New Jersey.
Oh, that is pretty cool. That's funny. That is a good story. Yeah, another interesting. After the war, my dad, stayed home and rather than shipping out again. He operated the WNY, Shoreside Marine Radio Telegraph Station in those days, in I think on Canal Street in Lower Manhattan. I think until relatively recently, the antennas may have still been on the top of the building. Nobody ever took them down. And then in the early 60s, when satellites started going up, he realized the writing was on the wall for marine radio telegraph and transferred into computers. Apparently he had that option because he got a college degree on the GI Bill after the war, like a lot of the people. Probably your dad and father-in-law also. And he was trained at RCA Camden in computers. And my brother who worked, my oldest brother who worked with him, and I think that one of his trainers was probably Steven Spielberg's father, who was an engineer training the guys on computers at about that time. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I got distracted. Was that addressed to me, WB3AB?
Yeah, that's my fault. I was probably getting too long-winded there. Yeah, but I was kind of going on about my dad, but after the war, he stayed in marine radio telegraph for a while and then transferred into computers when he saw that the handwriting was on the wall when communication satellites became a thing. Go ahead.
No, my father never really pursued it after the war. He went back to what he was doing before the war. Looking back at it from a lifetime or two away, I think that was a mistake. But then again, I wasn't there at the time, so, you know, it's really not for me to say.
Well, you know, a lot of people went on and did other things. I just found it interesting when I looked into it that apparently my dad recognized that technology was changing and marine radio telegraphy would not be around for the rest of his career potentially, and started doing something else. Now, when he transferred into computers, he came down to RCA Camden for training, and I came across an article that one of the guys who was training people on computers in the early 60s at RCA Camden was Steven Spielberg's father. So it's quite possible one of the people who trained my dad on the early computers was Steven Spielberg's father, dad.
Oh, yeah. There are all kinds of connections like that. It turns out that, you know, you are almost once removed from somebody famous, but that happens all the time. I assume you saw that recent movie about Steven Spielberg's basically true but slightly fictionalized nuke. What was that, a year and a half ago?
Yeah, the Fableman loved it. Yeah, my wife and I did see that, Dad.
I caught the movie in something strange, you know. I've hinted at this, I mentioned that I'm active in the Boy Scouts. I never made Eagle Scout as a kid for a combination of reasons. I'm not going to go into now, but my son did make Eagle Scout, as did Steven Spielberg. But here's the point. They make a big deal in the movie about the written test for the life-saving merit badge. And my knowledge is there's nothing in writing for the life-saving merit badge. You do it all in the water. And I bounced it off my son, and he said, absolutely, it's all in the water.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the practical test, you would think would be more dramatic for the movie, but, you know, they always change things in the movie to suit the plot, not necessarily following reality. But I do know that those who have succeeded in getting the Eagle Scout badge are extremely proud of it. One of my best friends is an Eagle Scout, and he's very proud of the fact that his sons apparently followed in his footsteps and became an Eagle Scout before college. Go ahead.
will tell you that I have no proof, but my son, when he was applying to colleges and the like, has received a number of surprising little lucky breaks. And the only thing that really explains it is the fact that his, you know, application, resume, whatever it says, Eagle Scout, and they tend to give them the benefit of the doubt.
That is interesting. I know. Nope. I've been told, you know, I'm retired, but one of the things I kind of do to help people out is help people out with resumes and LinkedIn profiles. And one of the things I was told is that people are very proud of being Eagle Scouts, and even though it's something they did as a child, let them put it on the resume. So there may be a sound reason for that. That is interesting.
I do have a theory on that. I found it on you.
Did somebody else want to jump in here?
Yeah, KD2VAC, Jim.
Go ahead, Jim.
I'm a big believer that the Eagle Scout done right is not a youth thing. It's a passage to adult. Because it's a couple ranks above most adults. Unfortunately, most of the time it's not really done that way. It's done by mommy. But if somebody legitimately gets the Eagle badge, they've proven themselves not just just a schmo, but I don't know, I can do something. Whatever it is that they demonstrated they can do. They demonstrated they can do something. Unfortunately, way too much of the time it's done by mommy. And that's stinky. I'll leave my verbiage at that.
Shall I give you my answer, Jim?
Oh, please. And I value your opinion on this tremendously.
Hold on. You are absolutely right. I have seen it. The good news is it's much less prevalent than you're implying or you feel. Have I seen it? Yes. Is it as common as I'm getting a feeling you're applying? No. But, and the way you can tell when it's done by mommy is when they get it junked. Because the law is, the rule is you must finish all of your Eagle Scout accomplishments by your 18th birthday. And the average Eagle Scout gets the forms in hours, if you're lucky, days before the deadline. If a kid gets it at 15, Jim, you're probably right. But when a kid gets it as a senior in high school, it's usually legit. Here's the point. I often give talks. I'm very involved in that, and I often give talks at Eagle Scout ceremonies. And I say something. Do they make a big deal about the Boy Scout oath, the Boy Scout law? That's all about being a good person. It misses the point. What the Boy Scouts teach you is resiliency. You learn how to handle problems. The classic, first aid. Boy Scouts have to know first aid. It's required to make Eagles have a first aid merit badge, which is almost like taking, you know, a high school level first aid course. And so if you see something, you're not totally lost. Similar to things like putting up with some unusual environments, like on the net I was talking about this brutal cold weather camping. If you do that, you have learned a lot. you have learned that if you can build up to something, if you can train yourself, if you can obtain the right equipment, you'd be surprised what you can do. It gives you resilience. Second item, every Eagle Scout must do an Eagle Scout project. An Eagle Scout project, they have to find a sponsor who needs someone to do a project, like a park, a church, something like that. They need something done. And the Eagle Scout has to deal, you know, the Eagle Scout candidate has to deal with them. Then they have to put together a full-blown proposal. What is the problem? What are you going to do about it? How are you going to do it? What parts are you going to use? How much is it going to cost? How are you going to raise the money? And you have to have all of this reviewed and approved. Then you have to get people, usually the younger kids in your scout group and friends and the like, to actually do the work while you're the manager. Then you have to manage it. You have to document everything. Then you have to submit a final report. What did we do? Here are the pictures of the finished thing. How much did it cost? How much off our estimates? How many hours of work did the kids do? What did you learn? How closely did they match it? Have you ever worked on a project at work? It's the same thing. Jim?
It certainly is. And you did a good job of putting it in verbiage there. I couldn't agree more. When it's done right, it truly is an accomplishment. I wish it was done right more often. Because it really is an accomplishment. It's taking a ute and raising him another bar of or two or three or six or ten and saying, hey, you can do these things if you use these skills we gave you and the resources available to you to get something done. So get something done. It's a powerful thing. I totally agree.
Oh, I have a few punchlines. I'm going to show you. Back in the day, when a Boy Scout makes Eagle Scout, they make a big deal about it. You know, they have a little party type thing called the Eagle Scout Court of Honor. And often local politicians come. And you know, it's a very, very nice ceremony. You usually get some county and town people there. At the time when my son was going through this, the Nassau County executive was Tom Galata. And he used to go to a lot of these. Lately, we haven't had Nassau County executive, but we have definitely have Town of Oyster Bay supervisor. But his point, once I was at an Eagle Scout Court of Honor, and Tom Galata is giving a little talk, he's giving the kid a certificate and all that. And he says, I've been hearing all of these things about what a great guy you are. They looked at him in the eyes. Yeah, plenty of money to get to the argument. What's out the house?
Oh, I love that. That's great. Excellent stuff. So I got to tell you, your participation in the net tonight and last week and whatnot is hugely appreciated. I can go on, but I'll just leave it at that. Hugely appreciated by me and others.
I appreciate that, Jim. Now, here's what happened. Back in the days when K2RIW was running this net, I could keep up with him, but he was really so good that it wasn't very often that there was any need. And now with Roy, I think Roy is absolutely fantastic, and there are many things that he does I couldn't do in a million years. But I feel Roy does not have the level of, you know, the detailed technological knowledge of certain aspects, where now what I have is more relevant than it was when KTYYW was doing it. So that, not to challenge Roy, but to help him, I try to provide a little bit of additional insight. And looking back, it's amazing how much crap I had accumulated in the recesses of my mind in all these years.
It's interesting that you say that, because I was feeling the very same things. You and some others bring some really, really depth of knowledge and experience, and even if you didn't, just the fact that you bring the conversation that happens to the table, so even if you knew it, which you're not, Roy does an excellent job socially to work a thing that's it's definitely as complicated as running the transmission on a bulldozer. You know, he runs an interesting game to make this work, and we all play our little parts. But you and your compadres, I can't think of a better word to say. The folks that from your perspective are highly valuable, critical in the whole thing. And Roy does a great job of orchestrating the what do you call that? The guy with his waves a stick at the orchestra.
Conductor.
Yes. He's an excellent, excellent conductor, I believe.
Totally different subject. I have a true story for you from yesterday.
I want to hear it, but is there any other voices out here that we're not listening to?
Yeah,
that was an epic, perfect double. So Ed, stand by a second. The other station, go ahead.
I was just saying to the three guys. WB2BXL.
You have a good evening. Thanks, guys. Yeah, what I said was, it's 11:35 p.m. on a Sunday night. Maybe we're the only two stupid enough to still be on the radio.
Well, that's certainly your thing.
Uniform? I'm listening too. Julia Uniform. What's the whole call?
Kilo Echo 2 Alpha Julia Uniform. I'm Charlie.
You mean I haven't driven you away?
Not yet.
I'll just have to keep trying then.
I'm going to go to bed in about 5 minutes. I'm just teasing you.
Now, one thing you may not realize with KV2, Paul, you're failing to know. This pair of repeaters, Glenn Oaks and Sullivan, the beep at the end of, a couple of seconds at the end of a transmission, has information, the different beeps, they figure out whether they're talking to the Sullivan repeater or my own repeater. And I can tell Jim is talking to the Sullivan repeater, and I have a silly story from yesterday to tell him. Are you ready, Jim?
I am.
I have been using, I have a brick DHF 2-meter 35-watt amplifier I've been using on and off. I gotta have it at least 10 years. And in that same period of time, I've had an HD, although this is the second one. One of them just broke, and she's been off. I replaced it with this one. And I periodically go out to the Boy Scout camp in Wading River, and I take the radio, and I change over to the Sullivan repeater halfway out there. And I did that yesterday. And when I went to Sullivan, things went to hell completely. And then I looked, and the short story, when I bought and programmed this radio with both repeaters, I had another radio I was using. And bottom line is, yesterday was the first time I ever took this particular HT and put it on Sullivan. And it was only then that I realized I made a mistake programming it at 5 kilohertz off. And it was sitting there waiting to bite me for close to a year.
Well, there you go. I got an interesting story to tell you.
If you can take it, I can.
Well, a man goes into a barbershop, and in the barbershop, there's two barbers. If I told you this story already, I'm pretty silly, but I tell it occasionally in my world. But anyway, the guy goes into the barbershop, and he goes in there, and there's one guy that's all fit as a fiddle. Every hair on his head is perfect. He looks sharp. He looks good as could be. He's clean. He's perfect. The other guy is a complete freaking mess. He looks like a bag of rags. And the two barbers in the barbershop are kind of like smiling and happy, and the bag of rags guy and the perfect squared away guy wants to get the new prospect of a new customer. Who do you pick?
I assume the answer is going to be counterintuitive, so I'm going to say the bag of rags guy got it because the fact that he wasn't fired means he must be really good at his job.
Well, you are 200% ahead of most people to answer the question, but you missed the fact. Who cut the guy who had the sharp haircut? Who cut his hair? It was the bag of rags.
Yeah, but, quote, bag of rags, unquote, literally means more than just a haircut. So if they were both dressed the same and one of them had nice, neat hair and the other one had messy hair without using the term rags, maybe I missed something, that rags was a euphemism, not literal. But yeah. I mean, I see your point in general, and I see your point very, very specifically, yes. One would assume if there's two barbers working together and cut each other's hair, absolutely so.
I think it's a better literary scholar than me could tell the story better, but you got the point entirely. The guy with the sloppy hair was the guy who cut the guy with the good hair's hair. I don't know if I said that right. Anyway, you get the point. And as we all evaluate things that happen in our day, today, yesterday, tomorrow, that's a factor. It's a thing. It's something to be considered. Back to you, Ed.
Yeah, I understand. I don't know. I don't know what else to say. Maybe we should just go to bed.
Agreed. I think we've had an excellent day, a nice net. Roy, if you're still there, excellent job. Thank you very much. K2VHD, I'll be listening for ending comments.
Oh, I got a good one. You ready?
You know I'm always ready.
a few years ago, I went out to the Boy Scouts camp in Wading River like I did yesterday, and I broke my arm 21 times. Does that make sense?
Well, I've been into situations where I could kind of see how that could happen, but do tell.
Here's the way it happened each time. A batch of anywhere from 5 to 10 Boy Scouts would come up to say, and say, all right, we're here for the first aid competition. And they say, all right, so what troop are patrol? I write it all down. And they say, okay, you ready? Yeah. Okay, I'm starting the stopwatch. My wrist is broken. What do you do?
Oh, I love it. Go on.
No, that was it. You know, I've taken the number 21 times. I don't remember. But, you know, every group got the same question. My wrist is broken. What do you do? So I broke my wrist 21 times, right?
Yeah. Like most people, I understand exactly what you're saying.
Obviously, I did not actually break my wrist, even once.
Like I said, I'm up to speed completely.
Although yesterday the challenge was, here is a fire pit. Here is a string 18 inches above the fire pit. You have 5 minutes to prepare. And then when you're ready, when you light the first match, or you actually draw a flame or a flint and steel, that seems to be the big thing now that you actually play it, I start a stopwatch. And we see how long it takes if they do burn the string.
A thought.
Say a thought?
That's exactly what I said, a thought.
You have a thought, or you're telling me somebody should think?
No, I'm saying I have a thought, but I want you to consider that I have a thought. because I think it's important.
All right, I've cranked up the armor plate. Let's go.
I think one of the big problems of our age and years, a bunch of old critters, but the age we live in, is this thing about tying every problem to a number of seconds. And the worst case example of it is the home improvement shows where they build a whole, you know, porch and bathroom and conservatory additions in the house in 6.5 days, and your wife divorces you because you can't do that. Because that happens all the time. Like, all the time. That happens all the time. That's a real thing that's happening right now. I'll let it drop for you, Cameron, and I'll continue.
Hold on, hold down. I have an absolute perfect answer.
Go.
This is a competition. Now, the award is a joke, but the scouts love the fact it's a competition, especially on the side. Sometimes, I once got a request. We do a Morse code contest? I said, absolutely. So I rigged it, said, somebody actually knew Morse code. You know, it would be a real contest. And if they didn't, I would lead them through it. So when it's over, at least I have an idea what Morse code is like. But what would blow me away is the kids who I had to work through painstakingly. They say, did we win? But in this particular case, my point is, they get a score. And for a number of reasons, I don't want it to be subjective. And I want to have something, like, for example, in the Olympics, if you have a 10K run, it's against what Fox. There's no doubt. If this guy came in 3 seconds ahead of that guy, it's done. No one. Ice skating is very subjective, and sometimes I wonder if it doesn't reflect more about the judges and the performance. I want to avoid that. So part of the story is touch and feel. Have the older boys worked with the younger ones? I'm saying boys. Now it could be girls, but, you know, generically, all right? Although, actually, yesterday we had all boys, but we often have girls. But if the older, say, the older scouts work with and mentor the younger scouts and help them, they get points. If they don't, they lose points. So they work as a cohesive team, so they have proper spirit, they get points. But I want at least part of it to be absolute. So I want to have something that if somebody challenges me, I have a number to throw at them. But the prize is such a meaningless joke. I asked when somebody does very badly, I said, no, don't worry about the stupid ribbon. They get a ribbon. They have 100 ribbons on their troop leg. They don't want to use another one. I said, no, let's learn something here. So the point I'm saying is there is a reason for that. You follow?
I follow completely.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing this for a long time. I've worked this out over the years. I remember once I was helping another guy who was running a knot tying contest. And what I didn't like about it was literally a knot tying contest. Give me a tow line hitch. Give me a sheet bend. And I said to myself, if they don't know the knot, they just stare at you. Or if they just fumble and get nowhere. I said, no. So that's why I came up with the idea of timing it. But not necessarily as a time, but to just say, listen, if you're really good, you want to be timed. You want to go against the guys on the other one. But if you don't, I'm going to work with you, and you'll get a totally ridiculous time. And they have no problem understanding that. You're going to tie this damn knot. If you can do it yourself in 5 seconds flat, wonderful. You get credit for 5 seconds. If I have to lead you through it, it takes a minute and a half. At least now you know how to do the damn knot.
I don't propose to have the holy grail of the answer to this. But we're talking in a place that I've lived the last couple decades of my life. We had a cowmaster in my place that was, he thought he was the king. And he did really good. Really good. So I would challenge him, you know, name a knot, and I'd tie it behind my back. And he throws a sheep shank out. I'm like, most people don't know what the heck a sheep shank is. Very few scouts do. I'm like, oh, shoot. I couldn't do it behind my back at the snap of my finger at that moment. But within 10 minutes, I could. And I did. It's not the speed. Speed is a false measure of success that's come out of our religious bowing down to sports stuff, I think. If you could do a sheep shank in a minute, or 3 minutes, or 4 minutes, or 6 minutes, if you could just do the damn thing, I'm as impressed as I need to be. If you could do it 8 seconds ahead of somebody else, it's utterly meaningless.
Have you ever participated in field day?
Not No, actually, no. It's because I haven't tried. It was a winter field day today I wanted to be involved with. But life has all its games, as you know. But the nature of the whole thing suits me very well. I will do it. I haven't yet.
Here's why I went off on such a ridiculous tangent. Field day, if you operate in a crowded environment, find the station, work the station, have a good solid contact, exchange the necessary information, and end the contact, that's a wonderful thing. But why are you doing it under a duress where you have to do so many? And that field day, you have to do so many, and they love it. It's the same thing they do normally, but under duress, and they love it. I mean, I agree with what you're saying 100%, but what I'm saying, when it counts, you are right. When the going gets tough, if you can tie the knot that holds something together that allows you to do what you have to do, that's a wonderful thing. It doesn't matter if it takes you a second or a minute. But people seem to love making it into a competition.
Yeah, there's an innate thing in the human condition that seems to do that. And I don't count that as a strength. I count that as a weakness. And that's, you probably never heard that before. I don't think that's a strength of ours that we need to compete with each other. I think that's a weakness. I think that it's encouraged so much that we have to engage that drive of competing with each other as a strength. And I don't think it is. There are times when it's very appropriate, and there's times when it's not, most of the time. I ride bikes. Never once wanted to get to the end of the bike ride before the other guy. I like to row boats. I never once had a drive to get there before the other guy. The competition thing is a twisted noodle. I'm trying to find a word. I don't get it. I don't get why if I'm riding a mountain bike through the woods, you got to get there before me. Okay, go ahead. But no, I don't get it.
I agree with you 100%, but there's a time for competition. For example, my mother always played Mahjong, and if I could be a winner, I would win a quarter. My wife plays Mahjong, and they don't have a bother with a quarter. They do it for the fun of the competition. The competition adds a challenge. One of the war things I've done in my life, I haven't done it lately, and I miss it, I really should try to get back into it, competitive pistol shooting. And I'm not shooting against you. I'm shooting against me. But the guys who are on my team wouldn't accept that, but I said, the hell with them. You know, I'm doing the best I can. I don't care how much the competition is going. And also, there's this whole series of things like Survivor on television, and they make that to a competition, and that I find offensive, more so than your concern. I have been in the wilderness with a group, and you are a team. You succeed or fail as a team. In some cases, with primitive societies, you're very survival. Depends on succeeding as a team, your alternative is dying. So to make that environment a competition, I find sacrilegious.
I think I missed some of the details in the last part, which was very important. what you were saying, but we need to succeed as human beings. And there are those that have other thoughts on that matter.
Well, my point is, a little competition sometimes adds a little bit of spice to something that's basically entertainment. Not always. No, I'm not being into bicycling, but I've done it in my time, and I never had any urge to be competitive with anybody else. Yeah, absolutely. But there is a time and a place. Let me tell you something. I told you through pet epistles. One of the guys in my club who we were just shooting against once or twice a month against each other, individually, when 9/11 happened, now he was some weird thing military reserve that he never spoke about. When 9/11 came, we heard, "I'm going overseas. Adios." He didn't come back for like a year. And he would not tell us where he was going. He wouldn't tell us very much about what he did there. But when he came back, after we were going, he said, "By the way, I want to thank you. Our competition kept me sharp and really, really, really paid off."
I don't know that I completely understand that scenario, and I'd like to. It doesn't necessarily have to happen now, but I'd like to understand that story.
It is obvious he went to Afghanistan in the early days when it was like the Northern Alliance of the Afghanis, and the U.S. had some people quietly working there. I knew he wasn't just the basic grunt. And he, as soon as 9/11 happened, he disappeared. Now, this was a 45-year-old guy. You know what I'm saying? This is special purpose stuff. I get the flavor is he was in some firefights using a pistol. And when it was over, he said, "Boy, the only reason I survived is I'm good at this."
We've certainly seen our share of that. But how we've been involved in these things, this could branch off too many different directions of this conversation. So I'll leave it at that.
My entire point is I gave them competition, I kept them sharp. In the most innocuous, meaningless, frivolous way. And it's something we never would have predicted in a million years. It paid off for him at some level. That's the story. Nothing more, nothing less.
I think I get it. I think. Yeah, we're doing some really weird places. On the planet, the country really, but the planet today. It's a strange day we find ourselves in.
I disagree. We've had a 75-year reprieve, and now we're going back to normal because all the guys who came home sick of hatred and killing said, "Surely we could do better." And now they've all died off, and we're going back to normal.
Okay, no disagreement at all. I've been saying that to a few people, you know, the old ladies in the family. Everything's all crazy. That's not how the world's been forever. We had this weird reprieve.
Yes, and our lives have fit to the reprieve, and that's why it's so upsetting that we're seeing we're going back to normal. We had figured we had gone beyond that, and it turns out we were wrong.
So then we need to figure out a pattern of decision-making that is
difficult.
There's an old saying, God give me the strength to change what I can, the grace to accept what I can, and the intelligence to know which paths are those who pass to take.
I have no counter arguments to that. That's not a phrase. No counter arguments.
And I think what you're trying to do here is change what you can possibly change. There are some things that we just can't change. Now, you know, obviously it's not that black and white. There is some fuzziness around the edges. But I'm saying in general, unless you're willing to go to extremes to fight the fuzzy edge, man's got to know his limitations.
Interesting you say that. I suppose I view things as this. When you have a light, a light bulb, a searchlight, well, my father liked to buy big fancy searchlights. Didn't do anything with them. But you hook up the 12-volt battery and out into the distance, there's a great beam of visibility. Well, you can share that with people, but that doesn't mean they give a hoot on what that beam of visibility shows them. So, I like to use his thing about, you know, shoot that beam of visibility out of the distance. And, you know, you can show it to 10 people, and 10 people will go, yes, so. But the 11th might go, wow, that's really interesting. I guess that's what I do. I seek, I try to do. No delusions that the other 9 of the subjects could give a crap. But one goes, that's so interesting.
All right, you brought an interesting topic with me, flashlights. To pick the wrong person, I am a true flashlight aficionado. But that does not mean I go out and buy the newest, most expensive ones. But I assure you, I'm fully aware of them. Here's my question. It's very simple. Don't go off on a tangent. I want a 3-second answer. In Tuluan time, was your dad, you know, physically and mentally able to do this? And tell about how long ago, or just say one word today.
I value your question totally, but I did not receive it. Repeat, please.
All right, let's keep it simple. Yes or no, is your dad still around? And is he, you know, is he alert?
No, dad died about 15 years ago, cancer of the everything, and he was a veteran of the Japan occupation. He was in after the war, 1947. No, he's been here and gone, and I followed in a few of his footsteps, and he's here no more.
I understand fully. That's a fascinating story. But it's completely off topic. You've heard the saying, you bring a knife to a gunfight. You're bringing a lifetime to a flashlight fight. My point, all right, died about 15 years. Good. I have my answer. It's a shame for another reason. He missed the renaissance, the flashlight